So today on the program, we are welcoming Cohasset attorney Craig McClellan, who is exploring the possibility of running for the District Attorney of Norfolk County in 2026, which is obviously more than 2 years away right now. But Mr. McClellan's here to tell us a little bit about himself, his background, and his reasons for thinking about this. Nice to meet you, Craig, first of all.
It's nice to meet you, Mr. Catalano. Thanks so much for having me here. I'm very excited about it. I'm genuinely appreciative of the opportunity to share my perspective here, so thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's the mission of Local Access is to let local folks tell their story.
Indeed.
So, as I mentioned, you're an attorney from Cohasset. Is that where you originate from?
Born and raised on the South Shore, so moved around from Plymouth, Duxbury, lived in Boston for a bit, and then Hingham, and now I've settled in Cohasset with my family, where I live with my wife and my two children. A son and a daughter. So that's where we are now. We have been for the last 7 years.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about your background, about your upbringing, where you went to school, and where you've worked, and where you're working now.
Sure. I think I'd say that sort of my early childhood years were in Plymouth, and then sort of formative years were in Duxbury, Massachusetts, is where I sort of came up. But I did attend Boston College High School in Dorchester, and then upon graduation, I went down to Providence College in Rhode Island for 4 years, and then came back to Boston and attended Suffolk University Law School for 3 years. And at that point, I then went off into my professional career. So always been in the area, South Shore kid through and through, for sure, and always been in the Northeast.
Professionally, you've had several different positions in your relatively short career so far.
Yes, I've had I've been a lawyer for 20 years.
Yeah,
and I've had a number of different positions. I started out. I went to law school because of my passion for public service. That's what I'm interested in, and some people are passionate about music, science, sports, whatever. For me, it's public service. I found that. That passion when I was in undergraduate at Providence, started sort of running for student government positions.
Oh, okay.
And then continued that in law school. And that was actually the reason I went to law school, because I thought a career in public service is perhaps appropriately buttressed by a legal education.
Hmm.
And upon graduating from law school, I went to work for the Suffolk County District Attorney's Office as an assistant district attorney, where I prosecuted a wide variety of crimes and offenses and cases, and that ultimately I was in a role in Superior Court where I was in charge of prosecuting gang-related violence in Boston. And I was there for approximately 8 years, I believe.
Okay.
And then I left that office for a different state agency, which is called the Commission on Judicial Conduct.
Yeah.
And that is an agency that handles complaints made against state court judges for allegations of misconduct.
Mm-hmm.
And I was an investigating staff attorney there, so we would take complaints in, we would vet those complaints, and then the ones that we deemed worthy of investigation were investigated and fully. And then a recommendation was made to the commission, which is a 9-member panel of appointees. And if some sanction or discipline was deemed necessary, then that was carried out.
Yes, sir.
So I was there for I think about 2 years, and then I went into private practice. I had my first child around that time, and so money became more of an issue. And so I went to work for a law firm in Boston, and I learned because to that point in time I had only criminal and administrative experience, and so I learned civil litigation from that position. I was there for a fairly short time, I think like maybe a year and a half or 2 years, but I learned a lot during that time, and I decided that I could replicate that on my own by forming my own practice and using the skills that I had learned to that point in my career, which is about a decade worth of experience, and I formed my own practice. And so now I have my own law firm in Cohasset, where I live, and I practice civil and business litigation, as well as criminal defense. I've always maintained a strong connection to the criminal justice system, and so now I've had a fairly robust amount of experience on both sides of the criminal courtroom, both prosecution and defense.
Yeah. So did you ever have a thought, even, you know, back, say, in college, of running for public office while you were, you know, pursuing your law degree?
Absolutely.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. So it was always my dream to run for public office. But I'm a firm believer in, you know, sort of getting the appropriate experience before you decide, you know, what direction you want to go in. There are a lot of different elected offices that one can run for. And, you know, so it was always something that I envisioned that I would do.
Hmm.
And so this is the first time that I have taken formal steps.
That was my next question. Have you ever run before? Okay, yeah.
Well, I shouldn't say that. I do hold public office currently.
Well, true.
But yeah. It's a small local public office, though elected.
Cohasset School Committee, right?
Yes. I'm the current chairperson of the Cohasset School Committee. Sure. I've been on that committee. It's been my great pleasure and honor to serve on that committee for about 6 years now.
Okay.
I'm going on 6 years, and that has been an absolute delight. I love that. It's a very fulfilling role. It's something that has great impact on our community, and I just love it. I love seeing the kids come and present. It's wonderful to be a part of that, so that's been an honor.
Young children yourself, are they in the Cohasset Public Schools?
They are very proud Cohasset Public School students,
yes. So opportunity to have a direct impact on the education they receive, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Do you come from a family of public service?
I do not.
Okay.
I do not. My neither of my parents were fortunate enough to attend college,
mm-hmm.
Though I am extremely proud of them. They've done very well, and they raised two boys in wonderful communities. But they were they put us first,
mm-hmm.
And they worked extremely hard to provide us with everything, including college education,
right.
And in my case, a graduate education, a law degree. Assisting us as much as possible. So I'm the first one that sort of went on that path. My brother's in construction.
Oh, okay.
And my father's in sales, and my mother's had a lot of retail-related jobs. So I'm the first sort of legal, you know, public service-oriented member of my family.
Yep.
Yeah.
So here we are, over 2 years until the 2026 state elections, but you're already exploring the possibility of running for the Norfolk County District Attorney seat. So talk about the thought process behind that.
Sure. As you know, it's really early.
Yes.
So for me, you know, I thought it, you know, would be a little premature to just come out guns blazing and this is what I'm doing, this is where we need to go, and this is what we need to do. So what I've decided is the appropriate path is to formally form the committee,
mm-hmm.
In order to explore my candidacy. And by explore, I mean I'm going to use the next, you know, the coming weeks and months to get out and listen to the residents of the various communities that make up Norfolk County. I am extremely interested. I love having these conversations. I've had a number of them already. I'm extremely interested in hearing what the voters, what the residents believe are the major challenges facing Norfolk County from a public safety and law enforcement perspective.
Right.
And some of those solutions that they believe make the most sense, right? Now, of course, I have my own perspectives and I have my own ideas about what can be done, or else I wouldn't be running for the
mm-hmm.
office, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's important to me that to not color the perspectives of anyone else that I'll be speaking to by sort of providing too much of that information up front. I want to sort of sanitize their perspective, hear what they have to say, because I'm a firm believer that all of our experiences, all of our interactions can help sort of formulate a more informed perspective ourselves. So like I may believe, hey, look, this is what we need to do here in Norfolk County, and this is the major problem. But I may get out and talk to people and think, you know, and say, after speaking to everyone and listening, that's not really the major problem we're confronting here. You know,
mm-hmm.
I think this may be the major problem. And yeah, I had this great idea on how to address it and approach it, but I heard a few things that actually make that idea a little bit better.
Okay.
And so I'm someone that's really open to growth and improvement. I think that any system or process or policy can always be improved upon, and the most constructive solution is often discovered by having open discussion with people that hold different perspectives.
Mm-hmm. So when did this kind of process start? You know, when did you start thinking about doing this? I mean, was there a trigger that said now's the time?
I suppose that, well, as I noted earlier, I've always wanted to run for office.
Right.
As a criminal attorney in Norfolk County, I'm obviously postured to observe what's happening in the sort of criminal investigative realm in my own county. And, you know, I have become frustrated in recent months and years by the fact that I think that the public has lost trust and confidence in this very important office. And I don't know that one person is to be blamed mm-hmm. for that. Mm-hmm. I think that maybe it's the failure of an entire system. Mm. But nevertheless, it, to me, it's objectively true and objectively apparent. And I believe that I have the skill set and the leadership abilities and the professional experiences to restore that public trust and confidence in this office.
Okay, we're kind of dancing around the big white elephant in the room, right, is the Karen Reed case. So if I don't ask you that, I'll be remiss. was that a contributing factor to determining to explore this possibility?
So here's how I look at the Karen Reed case. And there are a couple examples. The Karen Reed case is one. The Sandra Birchmore is another. The prosecution of Turtle Boy is another. I'm just listing a few of them, okay, that to a lawyer and I think to the general public, give rise to certain perceptions that the criminal investigative process has lost a bit of integrity, that it's lost some objectivity. And that is really the problem. Okay, so as far as the Karen Reed case goes, that's an example. And so the common denominator for all those examples I just cited and most of the drama and controversy that we're seeing with Norfolk County DA's office is conflicts of interest.
Mm.
Okay, that will destroy trust and confidence mm-hmm. from the public, okay, in a public office. If the public perceives, and whether those conflicts of interest are just perceived or real, right, which is even worse. If they perceive that there's a conflict of interest in the investigative process, then they will deem that investigative process to be not objective. And it has to be objective. It has to be free of outside prejudice and bias and influence. So when you're seeing situations like in the Karen Reed case, where there are all those examples I just cited, lead and assisting investigators that may have inappropriate connections with either witnesses or alleged victims or any other material parties to the case, that will lead the public to believe, hey, you know, it is possible that the investigators may have sort of formed a conclusion at the outset, and then they set out to sort of gather evidence that supported that conclusion, right? And it should be the opposite,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Mm-hmm.
We should be looking at a situation very objectively and saying, okay, is what happened here a crime, okay? Or was it an accident, okay? And I'm not just speaking about the Reed case,
sure.
I'm talking in general terms, okay? And if it is a crime, is there an individual or group of individuals responsible for that crime? And if there are, what are the best charges?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are the most sensible and relevant offenses that we should charge these individuals with? What do we have the best chance of convicting someone with? What does the evidence support in terms of charging, right? Those are that's the approach that should be taken. And I think people fear that, given some of the connections with all those examples we cited where, you know, the lead investigators are just connected to somehow the other side of the investigation, or one side or the other. That leads people to say, you know, this wasn't given a fair shake. And again, that may be just perceived,
right.
Or it may also be real. In either case, it's damaging to the overall mission of the district attorney's office.
Right, and as you mentioned, it casts a pall on all the investigations, all the cases, you know, related to that office, including one in your own hometown, right? The Walsh case,
yes.
as well, is another
exactly.
one that's calling into question. So how would you, as district attorney, change the culture, I guess, or change the process, or change the way the public perceives how these investigations are conducted?
Well, I think the answer to that question is very complex.
Yeah.
But I think there are a few examples of things that can be done or processes that can be put into place that will help restore the trust and confidence in the investigative process. First and foremost, I think that the district attorney's office should be much more, and this is in general, I mean, I don't know that, you know, this is particular to Norfolk County, but it certainly, I think, rings true to Norfolk County, okay? The district attorney's office needs to be much more connected to the public that it serves, okay? And what do I mean by that? Well, I mean, they need to directly and consistently engage the residents and voters, okay, in discourse. Not just when the community cannot only be exposed to or confronted with district attorney's office leadership when there's drama or controversy, problems, right? You need to have more regular appearances at, you know, local meetings and, you know, school events or school programming, things like that, so that you're developing, so that residents of this county are seeing district attorney's office leadership on a regular basis. They've had a number of discussions and conversations with these folks before any of that drama or controversy starts, so that when something like that happens, they're going to say, no, you know, I know Joe Catalano, you know, I know him, and I've had a lot of conversations with him, and I think that he's a person of good character, and they have a good heart, and they've been out there for the right reasons, and they're in this for the right reasons, and I have confidence that they're going to handle this. And when there are problems, when there are deficiencies that are unearthed, you know, I think that leadership needs to embrace those and embrace, if they do need to embrace blame, embrace the blame for that, right? And say, you know what, we've made a misstep here, and here is our plan on how we're going to improve our process and move forward from this and learn from this, right? Because we're all infallible, Joe, right? I mean, none of us are infallible. We're all fallible, right? We're all human beings, right? We're going to make mistakes. That's part of the experience. So no one can be expected to be perfect. But if you have this robust connection with the public you serve, coupled with ownership of mistakes and a willingness to confidently move forward in a better path, I think you're gonna restore some trust and faith in the public that you serve. Now that's one example, and I think that another example is having a really strong connection with your local departments. Okay, so there is
police departments.
Police departments. Yep. Yes. Okay. Thank you. And the state police that serves the county, right? There is, to an extent, an oversight function of the district attorney's office for any police investigation, okay? They're the chief law enforcement officers of the county. But it doesn't need to be like that. It can be a real thought partnership where, again, you're building, so trust relationships are built from consistent engagement, okay? Where folks feel a connection with one another and they feel mutual respect, right? So I think that if the district attorney's office seeks to really thought partner with their departments, with the same individuals sort of interacting with the same departments, there may be better connections that will help avoid these conflicts of interest that arise, right? So that there are maybe different perspectives brought to the table at the outset on critically looking at who are going to be the lead investigators here, and are there any possibilities or potential for any appearance of impropriety? And if there are, then let's avoid that so that there are no unintended consequences here, because we want to make sure that we're announcing to the public that this investigation is being run in a very objective fashion.
Yeah. So are you proposing like a liaison from the district attorney's office within community police departments?
Or? Maybe. Okay. But like I said at the outset of this discussion, it's too early for me to. Okay. I don't want to be going out and telling folks what I think should be done, what direction we need to move in before I hear from them.
Okay.
Because I really truly believe that in order to move forward in the best way, we have to sort of reboot this process in that it needs to start at the voter, at the resident level, okay? And so if we're gonna establish and restore trust in this office, we have to engage all the voters and residents, say, what do you feel? And like, so what you just articulated, maybe that's a possible way to go, right? But when I get out and speak to everyone, folks may have some really good ideas, especially folks that are ex-law enforcement or are current law enforcement. They may have some really good insights right. about how best to do that. And so I'm going to, you know, I think I'll reserve judgment, right. so to speak,
all
on
right.
that.
Okay, so how will you, a listening tour, right?
Exactly. So that's exactly, yes.
Yeah, right. How are you going to do that? Are you going to be at Lions Clubs meetings and, you
sure.
know, civic associations?
Yes to all.
Okay.
So
okay.
anyone that wants to speak with me, people yep. have called me on the phone. I've had, you know, hour-long conversations with people.
Really?
When I can, obviously. I have my own, I have a profession, I have clients
sure.
that I have to attend to. But I'm also exploring this, and I wouldn't be doing this if I wasn't going to make the time for it,
okay.
correct? But, you know, anyone and everyone. I was just out last week in the town of Sharon in a coffee shop, meeting with a few people in the community mm-hmm. and getting their perspectives
okay.
and just having a really candid discussion about, you know, the state of affairs in Norfolk County. And it was awesome. It was great. I love that. You know, that's just one example. I spoke to a young woman from Norwood over the phone yesterday. These are just ones that are in the top of my
sure.
head.
Yeah.
And had a wonderful conversation with these people and with this person and it just, I am a true believer that every single one of those conversations is going to make me a better candidate, you know, because I'll be much better equipped to formulate proposed policies or initiatives that directly reflect the will and perspectives of the residents of Norfolk County, rather, you know,
sure.
you know what I'm saying?
So do you have a timeline in your mind for when you'll make a formal decision as to whether or not you'll definitely be running?
I think it'll be somewhat organic. There's not,
yeah.
I don't think that there's a, I'm not putting a specific timeline on it. I do think that, again, it's very premature. We have a controversial presidential election going on right now.
Oh, yeah, that. Yeah.
I think that is overshadowing perhaps
sure.
a county race that's 2 years from now.
Right.
And then we're going to have the holidays, you know, coming in for a lot of folks and Thanksgiving. So, you know, I think it would be a little bit tone deaf to, you know, be, for me personally, to be announcing anything formal
okay.
right now. But, you know, I think certainly in the coming months, people are going to turn and shift their attention, you know, much more deliberately to the race here in Norfolk County for district attorney, because it certainly is a race of public interest.
Mm-hmm.
That's for sure, because there has been a lot of drama and controversy surrounding that office.
Part of running for any office is fundraising. I'm
good.
Sure you've thought about that. Do you have a kind of a mission or a path to go down that road?
Sure. I mean, any person that is any person that's considering a run for public office is going to have to consider that what I believe to be a very necessary evil.
Mm.
You know, fundraising is some people enjoy it, and it's a, you know, sort of an exciting process. It's something that needs to happen because you need to be able to pay for staff. You need to be able to pay for messaging, pay for advertisements. So, and this is what these funds that are donated pay for.
Right.
You know, this is what they go to, part of the process. So, unless you're going to independently, you know, donate to your campaign,
right.
which I'm not planning on doing.
Okay.
So, you know, again, I think that same as sort of the firm messaging, I think that really aggressive fundraising right now would be a little tone deaf. I think we're all kind of getting emails every other day from Kamala and Tim asking for $25 here, 10 there, and that's appropriate. Their election's right around the corner, right? But I think for someone coming in saying, hey, I'm running for Norfolk DA in 2026,
right.
And I'd like you to give me money, I think that might be pushing it a little bit too far.
Okay.
So I will, I mean, it's part of the process,
yep.
and there's gonna be some core supporters that I've already gotten some financial support from,
okay.
right? To get some fuel in the tank, so to speak.
Sure.
But you know, I think that I'll probably listen to the advice of those that I have engaged to help me with this, and to strategize and help me with the campaign, and I'll follow that advice.
Okay. All right. Anything else you'd like to add right now? As you mentioned, it's early, so we'll have you back.
Very early.
Okay.
I'd love to come back at some point and speak with you again once the race sort of takes form a little
sure.
bit more. I just am super appreciative of any opportunity to speak. I mean, anyone, it's very humbling when someone has an interest in what I'm, you know, setting out to do, and I really appreciate you for asking me here so I can speak to the Quincy community and your viewership about my initial thoughts here as I explore my candidacy for the Norfolk County District Attorney.
Oh, you're very welcome. It was a pleasure to chat with you and meet you, and we'll look forward to speaking again.
Thanks very much.
You're welcome. And thanks for watching us here at AEM Quincy. I'm Joe Catalano. We'll see you next time.